I'm your host, Bob Mackin, and this is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 18th, 2021. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. So, what's on edition number 182? We've got headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. Peter German, whose two blockbuster reports led to the Cullen Commission, testifies at the public inquiry into money laundering as it enters its final phase. And hear clips from a new documentary about British Columbia's broken freedom of information system and why we need a duty to document law. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or is the warning on the U.S. Centers for Disease Control website all you need to know about how our federal and provincial leaders have failed us in Canada? It's under the headline COVID-19 in Canada, and it says Level 4, very high level of COVID-19 in Canada. Travelers should avoid all travel to Canada. Because of the current situation in Canada, even fully vaccinated travelers may be at risk for getting and spreading COVID-19 variants and should avoid all travel to Canada. That's what it says. Canada is suffering rapidly spreading virus mutations, and there is not enough vaccine to go around. The health of the country and the economy continue to suffer. So, if Justin Trudeau asks you to re-elect the Liberal government in a snap election sometime this year, remember that the United States called Canada too dangerous to visit. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Japan Times, in break from official line, LDP number 2 floats Tokyo Games cancellation. There are fewer than 100 days until the opening ceremony of the Summer Olympics. Toshihiro Nakai, Secretary General of the ruling Liberal Democratic Party, said that canceling the Tokyo Games is still an option, a rare admission by a top official that has cast further doubt upon the postponed sporting event. His remarks came as a surprise, since public officials, organizers, and stakeholders have been steadfast in their public support for holding the Summer Games in July despite the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. Experts warn that even holding the games without spectators would still be dangerous if COVID-19 is running rampant. In Apple Daily, travel waived usher in one of the busiest Golden Week holidays in Chinese history. Chinese Labor Day weekend in May could shape up as one of the busiest Golden Weeks ever, as 200 million people in mainland China have booked travel holidays in anticipation of the easing of COVID-19 travel and quarantine rules. There were 102 million people who traveled during the Qingming Festival in April, according to China's Ministry of Culture and Tourism, which is 94.5% up to pre-pandemic levels. ABC News Australia, Dance Troupe 101 Doll Squadron defends performance at HMAS Supply Launch in Sydney. A Sydney dance troupe's performance at the launch of a new $2 billion Navy ship was panned as inappropriate. The dancers say coverage by the ABC and other media made them feel threatened and unsafe after footage of the routine went viral. In a widely circulated ABC video, the troupe is seen twerking in front of the stony-faced dignitaries attending the launch of the HMAS Supply in Woolloomooloo. Yes, Woolloomooloo. The group's director, Maya Sheridan, said the performance had been, quote, taken out of context, end quote, and was, quote, in no way meant to be disrespectful, end quote. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, super large squirrels, also known as marmots or rockchucks, emerge from hibernation to pester Oregon school. Last year, the Redmond School District was alarmed by a horde of rockchucks, also known as yellow-bellied marmots, at Hugh Hartman Elementary School. The district declared a pest emergency after staff found feces and holes near the elementary school's playground. The rock chucks create holes that cause tripping hazards, and their feces can spread disease such as salmonella, according to wildlife officials. In the Seattle Times, from commuting to Costco samples, Ron Judd's list of 20 things we don't need back after the pandemic. Such as rush hour commuting torture, in-person visits to the doctor's office, aka germ factory, corporate retreating and trade show conventioneering, food sample cart jams at Costco, and in-person sports drafts, all-you-can-eat buffets, big weddings, parent-teacher meetings, and shopping malls. In the Richmond News, teachers at New Richmond Private School told to tread lightly. Teachers at a new Chinese-owned private school in Richmond, set to open in September, will be told to tread lightly around topics such as the Chinese Communist Party, Tiananmen Square, and the Dalai Lama. Regardless, students will be credited with a British Columbia education. The Chaoyun International School on Bird Road was granted its certificate to operate from the BC Ministry of Education in March and is now open for registration with tuition fees between $15,000 and $23,000. Greg Corey, head of school, said teachers won't censor these three topics, but they will be told to redirect the conversation. And this week in the Breaker.News, these headlines. COVID exclusive. Fraser health officials talk pandemic stress. Surge planning and vaccine challenges. PACnet search warrants valid, says BC Supreme Court judge. And national security report points to China, Russia as threats to Canada's sovereignty. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. A new documentary from director Dwayne Beaver released April 16th. It's called Duty to Document, and it's about how to fix the broken Freedom of Information system in British Columbia. It was sparked by the triple delete scandal of 2015. Whistleblower Tim Duncan, who was working in the Transport Minister's office, revealed that the BC Liberal government was triple deleting email about Indigenous women who went missing on a northern BC highway. Information Commissioner Elizabeth Denham found the practice widespread. A political operative, George Gredis, was found guilty of lying to Denham under oath. But the actual deleting, that was not against the law, because there is no duty to document law. It's 2021 now, and the NDP is in power, but little has changed. The documentary includes clips from Elizabeth Denham, who is now the United Kingdom's Information Commissioner.
Public servants need to understand that they're trustees of public records. They're holding these records on behalf of the public.
Journalist Stephen Hume.
We know information is power. That's what it's about. Really, what we should be doing is looking to government and saying, if there's an access problem, why are you creating it? Don't be afraid of the public. Don't treat the public as though it were some kind of clandestine enemy that's trying to steal your information.
Lawyer Rob Botterell, who helped draft the original BC Freedom of Information law in 1993.
So the combination of not writing down critical information supporting decisions, plus the narrow interpretation of sections like the policy advice exception, the cabinet confidences exception, and Section 25 public interest disclosure provision, resulted in citizens not getting the information they needed and deserve. I mean, they paid for the development of this information to hold government accountable.
Elizabeth Denham.
Some of our reports have identified behaviors such as failure to document important decisions, workarounds of FOI requirements, destruction of records where records really should have existed.
Whistleblower Tim Duncan.
We received a request related to the Highway of Tears. It said any emails or documents, you're required to run a search on your own computer. I did that and had a whole series of hits, probably about 12 to 18. I alerted our ministerial assistant. He came over to the computer, took a look at the emails really quickly, and told me to delete them. There was no way I was going to do that. He took over my computer and deleted them out of the system.
Elizabeth Denham.
There should be a penalty for improperly destroying documents, and that's an important recommendation that my office made to the committee reviewing the legislation. So I have called for a duty to document.
For more information on the duty to document documentary, go to infoandprivacy.ca. British Columbia's public inquiry about money laundering in casinos and real estate is in the home stretch. Hearings are scheduled until mid-May, then Commissioner Austin Cullen has until mid-December to deliver his final report to the BC NDP cabinet. On April 12th and 13th, Cullen heard testimony from Peter German, the author of the two Dirty Money reports in 2018 and 2019 that examined money laundering and led to Premier John Horgan ordering the commission. German is the former Deputy Commissioner for the RCMP in Western Canada and former Deputy Commissioner for Corrections Canada in the Pacific region. He is also a law professor and the president of the International Center for Criminal Law Reform at the University of British Columbia. Commission Counsel Brock Martland asked German if he thinks that governments lack the political will to solve the problem.
That's a really difficult question. The problem that government has is priorities. We've got education, we've got health. There are so many things that government has to deal with. And law enforcement, crime, money laundering is just one more of those issues. So I fully appreciate that for government, it's not about this issue and this issue alone as it might be for me, so to speak. So there's always that balance in government. I think we've seen movement in this province that we haven't seen in other provinces. Certainly, I think the initiative to commission these reports in the first place showed a considerable foresight by the Attorney General. Obviously wanted to make a difference, wanted to inquire into this area. We haven't seen that in other provinces with, I would say, the possible exception of Quebec, which has also done a lot of work, and I refer there to the Charbonneau Commission and everything surrounding it. That's at the provincial level, which isn't to say that the others have neglected it. It's as I say, it's a matter of priorities. At the federal level, since my reports, we do know that the Public Safety Minister has announced certain initiatives in this area, and not necessarily because of my reports, don't get me wrong, but for whatever reasons, budget 2019 did have various provisions. We see a movement towards beneficial ownership registries. There are a lot of things going on. So I would be really reluctant to say that governments don't have the political will or that the bureaucracies don't have the political will. I think both at the provincial and federal level, we are much more alive to this issue now than before, and largely because of what we've seen from the provincial government here in this province highlighting this issue. But I think there's a long way to go, and one of the concerns that I would have is that recommendations can get lost, whether it's recommendations from my reports, whether it's recommendations from your commission. At the end of the day, what becomes of them? And we know that governments have a short time frame. We elect governments every 5 years or less. So bureaucracies continue though. And oftentimes the recommendations go into the bureaucracy writ large and they come out quite different than they went in. Sometimes for good reason, sometimes maybe not.
What I'd like to ask you next is if you could offer your views on what you see as being distinctive or unusual about money laundering activity in this province as compared to other parts of the world?
Yeah, I think it really is a reflection on our environment, and that would be the same wherever you go. The environment in, let's say, Toronto is different than here to a certain degree, similarly Quebec and so forth. But here in British Columbia and Vancouver, we are uniquely situated in terms of our geopolitical setup. We are in many ways an Asian looking city. We look to Asia, our commerce is to Asia. as well as to the United States. Everybody in the Lower Mainland lives within probably an hour of the U.S. border. There's a lot of north-south movement, and including to Mexico these days, with visa access being what it is. And all of this is COVID aside, if you get my drift. So you've got a large port, you've got large airport, among the largest on the western seaboard of North America. We are a high-tech location here in Vancouver and British Columbia. We have excellent financial systems. We have excellent communication systems. We're really well situated, and it's a prosperous economy. We also have a really ethnically diverse province and city, which is really, I think, one of the things that makes it so appealing to live here in terms of culture, ethnicity, and everything else. We are quite unique. On the flip side of this, organized crime sees all of these reasons as well. All of those issues that make this a great place to live also make it quite attractive, in my opinion, to organized crime. I could go over each of those again, but you can sort of put it together. It's the easy access in terms of ports, airports, United States, Asia. We're very well situated. Add to that the fact that we have a very fair and I would say small L liberal criminal justice system. We don't lock people up and throw the key away. I spent 4 years as the Deputy Commissioner of Federal Corrections. I'm quite familiar with our penitentiary system, and we have a parole system that is top class in terms of the world. But the organized crime, the downside isn't all that great. If you end up going to jail, you're probably not going to go for long. And that's a reality. We've also made it very difficult in recent years, and this isn't work of any one person, but through a collection of circumstances, very difficult to investigate financial crime in this country. It's not easy, and happy to go into that in some detail. So you put that together and then add to it that we have a fairly, again, small L liberal culture when it comes to drug use. A lot of drugs are consumed in this part of the country, not to say that they aren't consumed elsewhere as well, but it just makes us very attractive to organized crime. And where you have organized crime, you have money laundering. So in a nutshell.
I wonder if I could pick up on your comment about the, I suppose, more lenient or lower range of sentences imposed through our criminal justice process. I assume that contrasts with other parts of the world where there might be heftier kinds of jail sentences. Do you think the concept of general deterrence, that people will be deterred when they see the sentences go up, is more applicable when it comes to money laundering and financial crime than other maybe more sporadic or impulsive crimes?
Well, they don't pretend to be a criminologist. So in terms of the effect of sentencing itself, certainly in terms of sentencing, in this country, we don't see the lengthy sentences that you see with the federal guidelines in the United States. But I think that's just one part of it. There are so many different components of how our system works that make it very difficult, not only to get someone into the courts, let alone sentence them. I think our problem right now is getting organized criminals and money launderers into the courts. Sanctions and sentencing is almost after the fact. We're not there yet.
Yeah, I suppose to be deterrent, it's not simply the quantum, it's the fact of the charges being brought and a conviction achieved before you even get to sentencing.
Correct.
I'd like to pick up on one other thing you said with respect to the challenge in investigating financial crime. Without taking you on a 40-minute jog down that path, do you have a few thoughts, though, maybe in a quicker way that would help us understand why do you say that it's hard to investigate financial crime?
Yep. Like, I'm the first person to say that, you know, I'm really glad that we have a Charter of Rights in this country. It's done amazing things for us as Canadians, and it certainly reflects our society. However, there's another side to that, and that is that there are certain lines of cases which have made it very difficult for for criminal investigations, for financial crime investigations. I would say the Stinchcomb line of cases. Stinchcomb itself, quite frankly, I think is a great case. The ability for a person charged with a crime to see what they're accused of is important. But over the years, Stinchcomb has broadened and broadened. And now we have Jordan, which has essentially put a time frame on that period after charge. So you've got financial crime cases that take a long time to investigate. You have Stinchcomb disclosure, which takes a long time after charge approval. And then you're all of a sudden met with Jordan.
That was Peter German testifying April 12th at the Cullen Commission on Money Laundering in BC. This week's testimony includes former Premier Christy Clark. Go to cullencommission.ca.
All right. Well, what's happening, man? You got Marshawn Lynch here, man. Better known as the boy, the kid, beast mode, man.
Talk about the Odd Couple. Former Seattle Seahawks running back Marshawn Lynch sat down virtually with Dr. Anthony Fauci to talk about the vaccine rollout. Lynch preferred to let his hands and feet do the talking when he was a Seahawk. Now times have changed. Here's a clip from the 32-minute interview.
Pleasure to meet the Dr. Faucizi himself. You understand me? What's happening, big dog?
Thank you. It's good to be with you, Marshawn.
No problem. Did you understand anything I just said?
Yeah, I got it. I'm good at that.
All right. All good. It sounds like we on path.
Yep, we're on a path.
Yeah. What's going on, boss man?
Well, you know, we're trying to get as many people vaccinated against this COVID-19 because this has been a really horrible year for the entire country. We've had over 550,000 people die, disproportionately more African-American and Hispanics than whites. They get more severe disease, they get more hospitalizations and more deaths. So what we want to do is to see if we can convince as many people as possible when the vaccine becomes available to them to get vaccinated.
So grab some Skittles and go watch the whole thing. Find it at Marshawn Lynch Beast Mode Productions on YouTube. Maybe someone should give Beast Mode his own talk show.
You by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the SPCA, the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, ahead of Animal Abuse Prevention Day in BC on April 23rd. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
So I'm very happy that I'm going to get my Moderna shot today. And I wanted to tell everybody, I think you should get out there and do it too. I even changed one of my songs to fit the occasion. It goes, vaccine, 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 vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine, 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 vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm.
Those are the sounds of country music legend and actress Dolly Parton on Twitter. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 18th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on April 18th in 1999, Wayne Gretzky played his last game of his NHL career? Number 99 had an assist in the game, his 2,857th and last career point on the ice at Madison Square Garden. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.